Hello again, this is Rabbi Jeff Sachs of Atid and Web Yeshiva with another session looking at the Rambam's Shmona Prakim, his theory of the personality and personality development. Just one programming note for those of you with us on live line and anybody that might be listening to the archives. When the United States changes its clocks, after this session, there'll be a greater time difference between Israel and North America. I believe in England they've already changed the clocks. Right now we are 6 hours. Jerusalem is 6 hours ahead of New York. And as of next week, it'll be 7 hours ahead of New York. If you live outside of the New York area, you can do the math and add the right number of hours. I will continue giving the class at the same time, which is 9 p.m. Jerusalem time on Thursday evenings. It might mean that it'll be an hour earlier for you, depending where on the planet you might be. Okay. In Hawaii, they don't change the clocks. It's always sunny all year long. The second chapter of the Shmona Prakim. Here we are. The title of the chapter is Bimrie Kochot HaNefesh. Merry. Merry means not happy, as you might imagine in English. Merry means unhappy. It means rebellious, like a merid. Although I'm not 100% certain that those words are connected. But in the rebellions of the Kochot HaNefesh. In the previous chapter, the Rambam delineated the five components or forces of the one united soul. Uvidiat chelek asher bo olo yimtzu hamalot vapechituyot. So the rebellions of the soul and the vices, the virtues and vices of the soul. And this chapter deals with two different poles. One is that of obedience and disobedience, and the other is that of virtue and vice. And these things, although related, are not identical. There's not a complete overlap between them. There are virtues and there are vices, and then there is obedience and disobedience. Obedience and disobedience in the sense of alignment with what the Torah demands of us. And the Rambam is interested. This chapter is very much follows on the heels of the previous one. The previous one was the anatomy of the soul, and this is beginning to look at. This is beginning to look at the question of where in the soul, where can you point to say that this component is responsible for different actions or different attitudes. It's lahavdil, similar to the way now that they do with brain science, where they try to show you can put someone in an MRI and feed them chocolate and show that, you know, this lobe of the brain or that component of I must admit this is very far afield from my own areas of expertise, and whatever I'm sharing with you is, you know, the same kind of information I'm sure you've picked up from, you know, reading the news, but they can identify where in the brain is the pleasure center for eating chocolate or experiencing this emotion or feeling that sense. So similarly here, the Rambam's trying to point to these five components, and again, we spent some time going through that anatomy and showing that each of those components has subcomponents, but to show where in the soul or what parts of the soul are responsible for allegiances, obediences, disobediences, vices and virtues. So the Rambam begins. Well, first of all, I'm sorry. If you have a webcam, please hit the send video button so that we can see you. And if you don't have a webcam, again, just go out and get a webcam. It's like $10. There you go. Okay. Okay. The The Rambam says, da, you should know. It's an interesting linguistic tick of the Rambam that he begins very often with the verb da. Know, be aware of. Ki hameri v'hamishmat, rebellion and obedience. Discipline, mishmaat, is discipline from the root of shma, listening to. Hatori'im, that Torah discipline or rebellion against the Torah, amnam yimtzu l'shnei chalakim michalkei hanefesh. There are the notion of obedience or rebellion resides, as it were, if we could put the nefesh into the MRI, not just the brain. If we could put the nefesh into the MRI, we would discover that there are five components there, as we described, and rebellion or discipline reside in two of those five components, meaning they're connected to those components. V'heim hachelek hamargish, v'hachelek hamitorer livadam. So look at this handy chart that I made. Let's for a second pretend that you don't see what's here. Well, that's no good. That doesn't work. There you go. There are five, remember, review. There are five components of the soul. The zan, the nutritive, the margish, the sensitive, the imaginative, the hamidameh. Number four, the mitorer, the appetitive. That's, we spoke a lot about ratzon last time, about desire and wanting. And finally, at the apex, although the chart is designed in a descending order, but really this is the apex, is the rational, the sikhli. So the Rambam says that the ability, the faculty, the function of rebellion and obedience reside here in the sensitive, the sensation, those we talked about, the five senses, and in the mitorer, the appetitive. Appetite meaning not in the sense like I'm hungry, but in the sense of wanting, of desiring, of making choices about things and what you want. And that's the seat of transgression and of obedience. Why is that? So the Rambam says, let me go back here. V'shnei elu hachalakim yukol ha'averot v'hamitzvot. All of the averot and mitzvot will emanate from here. It's not that they're limited to this, but that the sin and mitzvah emanate from these two components of our personality. Aval hachelek hazan v'hachelek hamidameh ein mishmat bahem v'lo meri. Hoil v'ein ladat v'lebechira b'shnehem ma'ase klal v'lo yuchal ha'adam levatel pulatam o lahagbilam before ma. But in the nutritive soul and the imaginative soul, it's not shayech to talk about mitzvot or sins or things of that nature. Now, obviously, this, at first blush, you say this isn't true, because after all, the nutritive soul, you know, well, that's about eating. That's literally about digestion. So if you put a piece of bacon into your mouth, well, it seems that that's where, like, the sin resides. But that's not precise, because putting a piece of bacon in your mouth is really, although your digestive juices get working, that's not the sin. The sin has to do with the margish, and more so with the appetitive. Here, there's a good play on words. Appetite, if not in terms of the appetite for the bacon or for whatever it is that's not kosher, but from the sense that you've made a choice to say, I am going to eat this thing which is non-kosher. But in the nutritive part of the soul, that's, remember, we discussed, the Rambam speaks at length about, it appears to be very similar to that of the animals in appearance, but in reality, in quality, it's not at all. You remember the Rambam saying that, you know, just like the donkey eats and we eat, but a donkey eating and our eating, even though maybe biologically the same function is going on. I don't know that much about biology, and I know even less about donkey biology, but one imagines that the technique of, you know, swallowing food and breaking it down through with digestive juices and intestines and everything else, you know, there's a very large overlap between how it works in us and how it works in donkeys. But the Rambam says it doesn't matter. We're not speaking biologically. When we talk about donkeys eating and people eating, the word eating is merely a homonym. It's not the same thing at all. Because when a donkey eats, it's purely out of the animalistic urge to eat. But when a person eats, although there is clearly an animalistic component to it, it's part of this larger work of the soul. And because of that, it's transformative. Now, on top of this, I mean, we mentioned briefly in passing, on top of this, you can put, you know, everything that you've ever heard about how Judaism at least tries to sanctify the material. That's why we have brachot. That's why we have mitzvot related to eating, and not just eating, all other physical phenomena of the body generally, because that part of us, the animal part of us, the part that wants to eat, the part that wants the embrace of another person, and all that's associated with that, all of those types of physical desires, because they are so animalistic, because they are potentially such strong forces and desires in our life, that's specifically why both the Torah and then Chazal, expanding on the notions of the Torah, try to create a framework of kedusha, of holiness, around those things to rein in the animalistic. So unlike, and the Rambam will get to this at some length when he talks about the ascetic tendencies or the our antipathy towards the ascetic tendencies. Other religions say the body is no good and it would be better if we didn't have to eat or engage in other types of physical activities, particularly of the romantic nature. But what can we do? We're weak beings, so it's a concession to our weaknesses. That's not the Jewish approach. We believe in engaging in the pleasures of the world, but to do so in moderation after we have placed those physical pleasures within the framework of sanctity. So when we eat and when a donkey eats, it's two different things altogether. But the Rambam doesn't say it's just when we eat, we Jews who say brachot, and we Jews who maybe restrict ourselves to things that are kosher. It's the nature of the human being at large, not only the Torah-observing Jew. It could be that the Torah's notion of how to do it is a reflection of how we view the activity at its basis. But the Rambam would say this is true for Jew and Gentile alike, for observant and non-observant alike. Although it could be that the way that the mitzvot are structured are a reflection of how we view the actual thing. But in the nutritive and in the imaginative, these are things that happen involuntarily. Vihoraya, the Rambam will say. And since they happen involuntarily, it's not possible to speak of them in terms of rebellion. I mean, you might sometimes get a tummy ache, but that doesn't mean that your tummy is rebelling against... Why is that funny to say tummy ache? Sometimes you might get a tummy ache, but that doesn't mean that that your tummy is actually rebelling, although you might speak it that way metaphorically. Aval ha-chelek hazan ve-chelek ha-medameh, the nutritive and the imaginative, ein mishmat behem velo meri, ho'il ve-ein la-dat ve-la-bachira, since there's no free will. Your digestive juices work with no free will. Even your imagination works without free will. That's why we have to be careful what we expose ourselves to, both in the zan and in the midame, both in the food and in the imagination. I'll come back to that in a second. Velo yuchol adam levatel pulatam. You can't consciously stop, abort, cancel the activities of those two parts of the soul. O lahagbilam bifo alma, and neither can you limit them. Halo tire ki shnei elu achalakim ritzonei lamar hazan v'amidame. These two components, the nutritive and the imaginative, yifalu be'et hashena, mash'enkein b'shar kochot ha'nefesh. And what's the proof? These two components of the soul, the nutritive and the imaginative, they're even going when you're asleep, when you have no control. That's the source of dreams. Amnam hachelek hasichli, and the zan also is, you grow it, and on the contrary, you grow more at night than you do during the day. That's why our teenage son wakes up in the morning and he's taller than he was when he went to sleep. So that these two components, the nutritive and the imaginative, you have really no control over them. The only thing that you can control is what you put into them. Is what you put into them. So you can control what you put into your mouth. The act of putting it into your mouth involves the appetitive and the sensitive components of your soul. But once you swallow it, once the kochot hazan, the act of digestion comes into play, once it's gone down your gullet, it's on its own. And a whole system of whatever happens to the food once it goes down your throat, like one domino going into play, starts acting, and you have no control over it. You can't stop it, you can't control it, you can't, which is why you should eat healthy. You have a choice to eat healthy. You have a choice to eat kosher or not to eat kosher. You have a choice to eat things that are going to make you feel good or are going to give you a stomach ache. You have a choice to eat things in quantities that are going to fill you up and satisfy you, or you have the choice to zolel v'sove and to eat it, to go to town, to fress, as they say, and to eat disgusting amounts. But once you've made that choice and you put it into your mouth, then an involuntary process begins. Since it's involuntary, you can't say that there's sin or discipline involved. The choice and the action to have stuck it in your mouth, that may in fact be a sin. But it doesn't reside in this component, even though we might naturally think to place it here. It resides in these components. Similarly, on the imagination is like your gut. It's like your stomach. It will respond to whatever you put into it. So if you have a big spicy chili dog with onions, your nutritive soul is going to respond to that. There are equivalent things that you can put into your imagination, which are the equivalent of something that you would need Alka-Seltzer for if you were putting it into your mouth. And that's why we have halachot, like lo taturu acharei levavchem v'acharei einechem. Your choice to observe certain things. Just give me a second, let me see. Okay. Your choice to observe certain things, let's say, I don't know, 75% of all internet sites, which I'm told are not, like Web Yeshiva, but contain certain images that, a God-fearing person shouldn't be watching. A person can make a choice to watch something like that, or to look at something like that. And that is going to have an effect on your imagination, similar to the chili dogs with onions. Once you consume it, it's interesting that we talk about consuming popular culture. There's this discussion about popular culture and, not all of which is consistent with a life of holiness, although some of it is. But it's interesting that whenever you hear discussion, we talk about people being consumers of culture, generally of pop culture. But it's true, you consume it the same way that you consume food. You take it in, and once you've taken it in, it plays itself out on your imagination, and it's going to play itself out on dreams you have, on fantasies that you have, on it's going to impact on your modes of thought and expression in subconscious ways, right? It's going to have an impact on all of those types of things. So those actions coming, your choice is what you put into your body or put into your mind, and what get the output is what happens in your lower intestine and what happens in your imagination. But those occurrences, once you've ingested the whatever it is that you're putting in, those occurrences are involuntary. So they're not within the parameters of Meri Umashmat. The Rambam goes on to say, Amnam hachelek ha-sichli yesh bo mivucha. However, what we've said, the margish and the mitorer are the realm of rebellion or obedience. The nutritive and the imaginative are outside the parameters of obedience and disobedience, since they are involuntary. That, by the way, is a very important point. Obedience and disobedience has to be within the realm of the voluntary. And this is very appropriate for the Rambam, because for the Rambam, Bechira Chofshit is essential. It's irrelevant to talk about mitzvot and averot, about commandments and sin, about obedience and disobedience, outside of the context of Bechira Chofshit, free will. That's a typo. That's a tzadi. It's not a tough, but you get the point. Outside of the context of Bechira Chofshit, outside the context of free will, because since we believe in reward and punishment, since we believe that you're responsible for your actions, it's only relevant to speak of that if you also subscribe to Bechira Chofshit. It's actually a question on the Rambam. In the Rambam's 13 principles of faith, which we have learned together in the past, the Rambam nowhere mentions Bechira Chofshit. He doesn't mention the idea that you have to believe in free will, which is very strange, because for the Rambam, free will is essential. There's an entire chapter dedicated to it in the Hilchot Tshuva. It's a major topic in the Morah Nevuchim. Why doesn't he list it on the 13 principles of faith? Something you have to believe. You have to believe that people have free will. So among the answers that are given are the fact that since the Rambam counts reward and punishment, believing that we're accountable for our actions is one of the 13 principles of faith. Built into that belief has to be the belief in free will. Because if you don't believe in free will, reward and punishment is meaningless. It's completely meaningless. So since reward and punishment is essential, the things to which you are accountable really only reside in the realms where free will is relevant. But in the involuntary realms, it's irrelevant to discuss obedience or disobedience. Only at most, only metaphorically, can we say, "Oh, my stomach is fighting against me," but that's not for real. However, the Rambam says, in the Tchum HaSichli, the rational, it's not clear that there's obedience and disobedience. This is a little strange for the Rambam. But he says, Yesh Mivucha. It's perplexing. We're not sure. Mivucha from the same shorosh as Navoch, like the Moreh Nivuchim, the guide to the perplexed. Amnam HaChelek HaSichli Yesh Bo Mivucha. Aval Ani Omer She'efshar She'yeh B'zeh HaKoach Gam Kein Mishmat V'meri. So the Rambam says, I claim that there can be obedience and disobedience even in the rational realm. So for the Rambam admits that this is not something that there's unanimity about. But the Rambam says, for me, I'm going to put a check mark in this box. And I'm going to say that there can be obedience and disobedience to the Torah in the rational realm. L'fi emunot de'a b'teila, o emunot de'a amitit, through belief. Now, interestingly, you know, the Rambam says that belief is a mitzvah. You know that there's 613 mitzvot, taryag mitzvot. Ramach aseh, 248 positive commandments. Vishasa, 365 negative commandments. Oops. 365 negative commandments equals, where's the equal sign? Equals 613. Everyone agrees to this, except for the people that don't. But for our purposes, let's say everyone agrees. However, it's interesting, even though the Gemara mentions this idea, 248 positive, 365 negative, equals 613 mitzvot, the Gemara does not go to the trouble to enumerate what they are. Now, although the overwhelming majority of the 613 are matters of record and are unanimous, there are disagreements about how to count. The Rambam has a work called the Sefer HaMitzvot, where he lists what he believes are the 613 mitzvot, and by way of introduction, he tells you the principles that he used to come up with those, with that count. But there are disagreements. The Ramban, on a number of issues, disagrees with the Rambam, and says, the Rambam counted this as a mitzvah, but I, the Ramban, do not count it as a mitzvah. But if the Ramban takes it away, he has to find something else to replace it. And the numbers have to work out. You have to end up with 248 on the positive side and 365 on the negative side, on the prohibitions, equals 613. So if the Ramban, for example, were to say, and there were other counts of Sadia Gona's account and the Bahaga's account and etc., etc., etc. But if the Ramban, for example, says that the Rambam left something out, that means that he, the Ramban, has to remove something from the list so that the math still works out. There are a number of very famous cases where the Ramban, for example, thought the Rambam skipped something. Does anybody know of some of those cases? Differences of opinion between the Rambam and the Ramban in the Minyan HaMitzvot. Someone here in the studio audience is waving their hand, but she doesn't have a microphone, so she can't speak up. Something at the beginning of the Aseret HaDibrot, absolutely. Not just something at the beginning, but the very beginning of the Aseret HaDibrot. The most famous example is Anochi, correct? Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The Rambam counts belief in God as the very first mitzvah. It's the very first mitzvah in his count in the Sefer HaMitzvot. It's the very first thing he addresses at the very beginning of the Mor Nevuchim. Belief in God, Yesod HaYesodot V'Amud HaChachamot, Leida She'esham Matzui Rishon. Belief in God is, for the Rambam, the very first mitzvah. The Ramban, Nachmanides, certainly believed that you have to believe in God. He just thought that it doesn't get counted in the list because it's a little tautological. Belief in God, which is of course obligatory in Judaism, is the precursor to all mitzvot. It's the granddaddy of all mitzvot, as it were, and it's just illogical to speak about it as the first mitzvah when it's the precursor, it's the precondition, it's the what they used to call that in college, the course you had to take before you could take a different course. Oh, what was that called? A prerequisite. Yeah, I just said that. Yeah, prerequisite. It's the prerequisite for the other 613, but it doesn't get counted. And since it doesn't get counted, it makes room for a different mitzvah. What's a mitzvah that the Ramban does count that the Rambam doesn't count? So among the more famous example, the most famous example is probably Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban, Nachmanides, who at the end of his life actually did come and live in Israel, counts Yishuv Kibush Eretz Yisrael, conquering and occupying Israel, as one of the 613 mitzvot. The Rambam, Maimonides, mysteriously does not count it. Why that is the topic of a lengthy shiur. I think actually Rabbi Rausman spoke about it last Sunday or a week and a half ago on the Sunday morning program. But why the Rambam doesn't count it is very mysterious, particularly because we have a number of statements of him on the record speaking about the imperative and the importance of living in Eretz Yisrael, but yet he does not count it as one of the 613. And there are many different reasons that are given. There are many different reasons that are given to apologize or to justify or to explain why the Rambam doesn't count it, and to still show that the Rambam was a Zionist and thought living in Israel was the right thing to do, and maybe even the obligatory thing to do. But for some technical reason, maybe it's not counted. The Rambam counts, all of this is a side point. The Rambam counts belief in God as a mitzvah. Believing in God, therefore, is a reflection of mishmat, of discipline, of commitment, of an act of allegiance. Disbelief is an act of rebellion. So obviously for the Rambam, the rational soul, which is of course the headquarters for matters of belief and opinion, can contain obedience and disobedience. But the Rambam is being very honest with you, and he's telling you that not everybody agrees with this. That not everybody agrees with this. But he says, for me, matters of emunat de'a b'teila, belief in false opinions, and belief in true opinions, are matters of obedience and disobedience. Aval ein bo ma'aseh, but as opposed to other mitzvot, like putting on tefillin, like taking a lulav, like lighting a candle, like eating a matzah, like paying back a loan, and other averot, like hitting someone, like damaging someone, like lighting a fire on Shabbat, like eating a piece of ham, all of which, both the mitzvot and the averot, contain some kind of action. Shiomar alav bistam shem maase mitzvah o avera lefichach amarti lamala shebishnei achalakim ahem imtzu averot va'amitzvot. Right? These are the areas of action. The kind of conventional sense of mitzvah. Now you know that there were people that disagreed with the Rambam in his own time and afterwards and said that Judaism is not a religion of creed, it's a religion of deed. The Judaism is concerned with doing mitzvot, but it's not concerned with beliefs and opinions. For the Rambam, this is absolutely not true. For the Rambam, this is absolutely not true. For the Rambam, belief and opinion, again, opinion, not opinion like, you know, do you think, you know, you should vote for the Tea Party, or you think you should vote for, you know, the people that know what's written in the First Amendment. Pardon the political editorializing. That's not the kind of opinion we're talking about. Here we're talking about opinions in the sense of the states of mind that affect attitude, which he's going to come to in a minute. Amnam, that was the whole discussion of Meri v'mishmat, discipline and rebellion. However, ma'alot are like virtues. Harei hem shnei minim, ma'alot midot, u'ma'alot sichliot. There are two different types of virtue. There are ma'alot midot and ma'alot sichliot. These can be described, the ma'alot sichliot are clearly the rational virtues, what we've until now called reason. Midot here are like what we've described as deot, attitudes. He'll describe it in greater detail in a second. What we call conventionally midot, what the Rambam generally calls deot, and which can also be thought of as, you know, as wisdom, not the kind of wisdom of sechel, right, but wisdom like chokhmah. He'll describe it in a second. Right, the in some translations described as the moral virtues and the rational virtues. Right, ma'alot hamidot, the moral virtues; ma'alot sichliot, the rational virtues. U'kenegdan shnei minei pechituyot, and there are two different types of vice that correspond. Amnam ma'alot sichliot harei hen yimtzu l'chelek hasichli. In the chelek hasichli, you have the ma'alot. You have the ma'alot sichliot, the intellectual virtues, the absence of which is itself a type of vice. Yediyat hasibot harechokot v'akrovot, achar yediyot mitziot hadavar asher yichkaru sibatav, a kind of wisdom about causation, about understanding how things work, how one thing impacts on another, on knowing how if one thing comes before another, to know if there's causation involved. It's like that the error, which in Latin, I remember my high school Latin, post hoc ergo propter hoc. You see people walk out of the house in the morning carrying umbrellas, and then later it starts to rain, and you think that carrying an umbrella in the morning causes it to rain is an error. It's an error that's made through a lack of understanding of cause and effect. And to understand that not just be post hoc ergo propter hoc, literally, after this, therefore, because of this. Just because one thing follows another doesn't mean that there was a causational reality. Sometimes it does, and to understand that. Sherry, I'm looking at your question. One second. No, so here we're not talking about mitzvah and avera, but about ma'alot, about virtues, about what the right thing to be is. And this is significant. This is significant because for the Rambam, although there may be an overlap, discipline and virtue are not synonyms. Discipline means this column. Discipline means, hold on a second. Discipline means, and again for the Rambam, this is a check here. Discipline means doing what's required of you, performing and observing mitzvot and avoiding averot. There are certain parts of your soul that are active in doing this, and others that don't have a role. But there's a whole different continuum here. There's a whole different scale. And that is the scale of ma'alot, of virtues, which are not about mitzvot. They're about developing your personality in a way that you will be able to, together, these two things, of course, go hand in hand, but to develop yourself in such a way that you will be a refined person, someone that has prepared him or herself to at least approach perfection. But in other words, this is the realm of mitzvot. This is the realm of personality. Now, it could be that there's a mitzvah to develop your personality, but it is not the realm of mitzvah per se. Let's go back. Where were we? Amnam ma'alot sechliot harayinim zuchers v'mein chokma v'hi yediyat ha'sibot v'ha'sechel. Sechel is reason. V'menu ha'sechel ha'isechel is subdivided between the sechel ha'iyuni, the sechel ha'nikneh, and what he calls charifut v'tov havana. These can be described as sechel ha'iyuni is a kind of theoretical wisdom or an inbred reason wisdom. The sechel hanikne is the acquired intellect. Some aptitudes you're born with, and others you acquire. And the Rambam is very clear to say that our reason is made up of both. There's certain theoretical knowledge or inbred knowledge, a kind of way of knowing things, a kind of way of intuiting things. And then there's the seichel that you acquire as you go along. The Rambam says he's not going to discuss that here. And then finally is what he calls charifut v'tov havana. Charifut v'tov havana, v'hu tuv tfisat hadavar b'mihirut blozman. It's a kind of a habit of mind that you might, like if you're able to just pick certain things up. O b'zman katsar ma'od, either you just like pick it up immediately, you can just like look at it and understand it, you can size up the situation, or you can figure it out really quickly. This is true for all different types of tasks. This is true for abstract thinking. This is true for, the Rambam was not Howard Gardner, and Howard Gardner, Kal Vachomer, is not the Rambam. But the notion that there are different types of intelligences, the Howard Gardner's work on different types of intelligence. There's emotional intelligence. There's spatial intelligence. There's good old fashioned book learning, etc. There's certain things you're just able to pick up on. And the vices are the absence of all of these qualities. How does that differ from the first one? From which first one? From Sechel Ha'iyuni? Right, so the Sechel Ha'iyuni is your ability to reason. I think. Muskalot Harishonot. Sechel Vahu Asher Yusaglanu Bateva. Things that you know. And the second is a kind of habit of mind. It's not something that you know, the first might be things that you know by intuition. And the second is an ability. It's a quality that you possess to understand something you don't understand, you don't know about it, you've never heard of it. But I'm going to present it to two different people. One person's going to get it, and another person's going to catch on a little slower. It's not inbred. It's the habit, the ability to catch on. That's what differs, and that in and of itself, the ability to understand something when it's taught to you, is itself a type of intelligence. The first category is the things that you just know bateva, naturally, natural knowledge. What I guess what we would call intuition, or the inbred knowledge. The third category of sechel is your ability to get it or not to get it once it's been taught to you. But these are not necessarily things. These are definitely not things that you knew about before. Amnam malot hamidot harei hein yimtzu lechelek hamitorer levado, vachelek hamargish bezeh, ha'inyan einu elo shamash lechelek hamitorer. I'm not sure, Lee. I'm not sure. I don't know. I can't imagine. I don't know. Lee asks, can you have an absence of any seichel iyuni? Can you be born without any inbred reason at all? I don't know. I don't know what the Rambam would say. The vice is, no, in other words, it's not all or nothing. Vice is where you reside. But again, vices might be a confusing term because it implies crime, you know, like the vice squad. That's not the meaning of vice here. It's a bad term which I took from the translation. Pchitut means pachot, a lessening, a degrading. That those qualities have been degraded in you. You just if you don't have it. It's possible to have that you're lower down on the scale. I guess in theory you can be completely missing. I guess in theory you can be completely missing. So the Rambam says these vices and virtues exist in the appetitive, where the ratzon lives, and in the rational. The margish only serves as a handmaiden to the appetitive in this case, as the Rambam says. Amnam malot hamidot harei hen yimtzu l'chelek hamitorer levado v'chelek hamargish bezeh ha'inyan eino ela shamash l'chelek hamitorer. Your sensations, the ability to take in things through the senses, serve as a shamash, as the butler to the ratzon, to the appetite in these things. It's the intake, but it doesn't serve an independent function. But in order to develop the ma'alot hamidot, so you take in things through the senses. Umalad ze chelek rabotein kezihirut v'inyan yafe v'ayin yafe tzedek savlanut anava histapkut gvura nemanut zulatan. These are what we generally think of the malot hamidot through the appetitive. These are generally what we think of as character traits, courage, discipline, righteousness, patience, modesty, generosity. Gvura is heroism, but it probably means in the sense of the Mishnah of Ezehu Gibor, Kovesh et Yitzro. It probably has something to do with the heroism necessary for self-control. Ne'emanut is loyalty, etc. All of these character traits, the development of which the Rambam will describe at length as we move along, these reside, or their absence, their presence or their absence is a function of the mitorer, your desires, and how they play out, and how you act, and how you develop yourself. So in that way, the sensitive, the chelek hamargish, provides stimuli to developing these traits in yourself, but the developing it or not developing it, letting it languish or letting it blossom, as a vice or a virtue, these reside in the appetitive, because it has to do with making choices about what you want and what you want to be and how you conceive of yourself and etc. And those all reside here. אבל החלק הזן והמדמה לא יאמר בו לא מעלה ולא פחיתות. אמנם יאמר שהוא מתנהל כתיקונו או שלא תיקונו. But when it comes to the nutritive or the imaginative, the involuntary forces at play in your personality, so you can't speak about midot there. You can't speak about midot there. When we say about a slovenly person that just likes to eat and drink, that he's a zhlob, that all he does is eat or drink, that's not a critique of this function. It's a critique of this function. He's made choices about who he wants to be and how he wants to act and how the world is going to, and how he allows the world to perceive him. Those things are influenced by his sight and taste and smell and touch, by the smell of that chili dog, and by I have a confession to make. There's a new deli that opened in Efrat, not New Delhi, you know, like the city in India. There's a new restaurant that opened in Efrat this week, and I had a chili dog for dinner. That's why it's on my mind, and it's why I'm feeling a little bad about it. But the sight and sense and smell of that influences your desires. And if you have too many chili dogs, it's going to influence how you're perceived by other people. But that's here. Even though you might think it's in the zan, it's not. The zan is the involuntary responses that take place once you have begun the digestion. So all you can say about a person is metaphorically to say that they, you know, looks like their thyroid is in order, looks like their digestion is in order or not. But it's only metaphorically to speak about those things as vices or virtues. You know, like to say, I don't know, chas v'shalom, I'm not talking about anyone specific, but to say about somebody that really doesn't take care of themselves, oh, he looks like he's a heart attack waiting to happen. So whether or not a heart attack happens or not, God forbid, that would be in the realm of the involuntary, of the uncontrollable. But really, you're making a criticism not about whether or not he's going to have a heart attack. You're making criticism about everything that he's done up until now that has led him to that sorry physical, state. For the Rambam, the interesting thing here is, of course, hold on a second. The interesting thing here, of course. Is the emphasis on free will as an essential component, not just in whether or not you adhere to the commandments or not, but its role in personality development. the Rambam makes a point in Hilchot Teshuvah, which is an important parallel text here, that every person can be as righteous as Moshe Rabbeinu or as wicked as Yerovam ben Nevat, the worst of the worst. Everything's up to you. There's nothing is decreed in heaven that this person's going to be righteous or that person's going to be wicked. On the contrary, if that was the case, then there'd be no point in there being reward and punishment. Because if it's decreed that you're going to be as righteous as Moshe Rabbeinu, so then why should you be rewarded for that? And if it's decreed that you're going to be as wicked as the most wicked Russia, why should you be punished for that? That's who you are. That's how you were created. You know, my kid, I have a little kid who's 3 years old. I like all three-year-old kids. He likes playing with dinosaurs. You know, he's got the little plastic dinosaurs. So, like, intuitively, he knows that Tyrannosaurus Rex is a bad guy. Now, maybe that's because the toy makers make him look bad. He's got those teeth, and he goes like this, and he, you don't need a battery and an electronic sound effect to know that it makes a rawr noise. But that's an anthropomorphism. We're projecting human vices and virtues onto poor Tyrannosaurus Rex. Because Tyrannosaurus Rex isn't a bad guy. He's not evil because he's a carnivore and he eats other dinosaurs. That's who he is. That's how he's created. It's not a matter of free will that he should decide to. It's like there's a cartoon my kids have, one of those Disney movies about the fish, where the sharks have like the equivalent of Alcoholics Anonymous, where they decide they're not going to eat. They're going to be vegetarians. As if it's like a vice to, but that's anthropomorphism that we put on the shark, that he's a bad guy when he eats other fish or eats people. That's what he does. That's what he's created to do, right? It's the circle of life, right? Doesn't mean that he's evil. I mean, I wouldn't want to get eaten by one, but that doesn't mean that he's bad, because he's an animal. So you can't talk about vice and virtue and evil when an animal does what it's supposed to do. But that's not true about us. We're not animals. We are a different kind of creature between animals and angels. Angels also. The angels are the opposite of Tyrannosaurus Rex. An angel doesn't get praised for only doing good. That's, you know, the famous medrash about why the Torah can't be given to the angels. The Torah is given to us because we sometimes are like angels and sometimes we're like sharks. We're sometimes good, we're sometimes we have free will. We hope we get it right more than we get it wrong, but sometimes we get it wrong, and that's what the Torah is for. That's what the Torah is designed for. So the whole discussion of obedience and disobedience is central to an analysis of what the human personality is. There's one axis of obedience and disobedience to the mitzvot, for us, the Taryag mitzvot, for the rest of society, whatever their mitzvot are, the Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach, the requirements to have some kind of generally moral and functional society would apply. I imagine the Rambam would say would apply, the conversation would apply to them as well, in terms of whatever mitzvot they have. And also, the refining of the personality. For the Rambam, the personality is made up of a heavy chunk of seichel, of the rational component, but not exclusively. Not exclusively. For the Rambam, there's also the malot hamidot, the character traits, friendship, loyalty, sensitivity, honesty, the character traits, the dispositions that you have, those are also matters of vice and virtue. So this chapter serves as a follow-up to the previous chapter, to the discussion of what the soul is like. And this is a question of how the soul works, where the mitzvot are. The third chapter we'll look at next Thursday night, is titled Becholyei HaNefesh. What happens when the system breaks down? What happens when the soul becomes diseased? And how that plays itself out. And that's what we'll get into next week. Again, just by way of reminder, check your local listings in terms of the time. But if you're in North America, the Shiur will be taking place 1 hour earlier than it has until now. Unless, of course, you're in Hawaii, where everything is always the same. Okay, I'll stay on if anybody has any questions. And if not, Shabbat Shalom.